Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel, presented by Mainstay Financial and Anna Lee Leonard, who is responsible for the information and opinions expressed during the show.
Hi, this is Financial Advisor of the Year, Jim Brogan of Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to Winning with my good friend and colleague, Anna Lee Leonard.
You're listening to Winning with Anna Lee. Anna Lee is a retirement and estate planner, a member of the Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisor Group, as well as a sought-after speaker on such topics as income planning, 401k rollovers, and advanced IRA reduction strategies. When not working in her private practice, Anna Lee joins with other certified senior advisors to promote top-quality services to mature adults in the Pensacola area. Her goal is to help you prepare for and live comfortably in retirement. You can reach her office at 437-3127 or online at mainstaypensacola.com. Or call her now at 437-1620 on Winning with Anna Lee.
Good morning. How are we doing, Jennifer?
Good morning, Bob. Thanks for coming in and hanging out with me today.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. What a day, huh?
Listen, I'm just like I said before, I'm just glad we didn't have copious amounts of rain, which would turn into basically the entire Northwest shutting down.
Yeah.
Northwest Florida, excuse me.
Can you imagine?
Well, there was one year, and I forgot to mention this earlier. We had just moved here. Now, I moved here from North Jersey.
Okay.
Back in 2013. I'm expecting, and I had lived in South Florida before, so I'm expecting, you know, a South Florida winter.
Yeah.
You know, we're still wearing t-shirts and jeans.
Exactly.
But we're not super sweaty.
Right.
Well, no, that January or February, we had that ice storm.
Right.
And we were ice skating through our streets, literally. And I was pregnant.
Yeah.
I couldn't barely walk down the street. You couldn't drive. So I'm just glad it's nowhere near that.
Right. Because we're not equipped here, you know,
and
I know
you're
from Jersey. I moved here from Cleveland, Ohio. I know cold. You know cold. You know, they're equipped up there.
Yes, the salt trucks,
right.
The plows,
right.
The everything. Just knowing how to maneuver through it. My sister, she works in the plow industry in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yeah,
and she was going to work to get ready for, you know, dispatching all of the trucks. But
right.
Me, I'm like, don't do it.
Right.
But everybody has four-wheel drive. They know how to do it. I love Cleveland, by the way.
That's right.
One of my favorite cities that I pass through.
Well,
yeah.
You're one of the few. You know, I'm usually defending, you know, Cleveland. But
no, I have really good friends that do amazing work up there to help children that are at risk. And I've just met incredible people from Cleveland, to tell you the truth.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. And everybody in Cleveland appreciates that.
We'll give you a little shout out.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about Roth IRAs. We've hit that hard. We've talked about the advantages, the disadvantages. But today, we're going to talk a little bit about how they came into being, really the history of them, and you know, maybe where we go from here. So just to recap, Jenna, we talked, I think, 2 weeks ago about the advantages, and the advantages are, you know, are numerous, but we'll quickly go over them. You get tax-free growth. You get tax-free distributions.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike a traditional IRA, where the growth is tax-free or tax-deferred, but the distributions are fully taxable. I don't want to say they're the opposite, because they're both retirement vehicles, but you know, I think you've heard me say this: the Roth IRA is really the golden goose of all accounts.
Right.
And as we share with our clients, you know, how would you like to open an account where all of your money that resides in this account grows tax-free, meaning the capital gains, the dividends, the interest, anything associated with the growth of the account or the income of the account grows tax-free. Then when you pull the money out one day, if you choose to, and I'll touch on that later, all of the distributions are tax-free. Sounds like a great account. The problem is the contributions are limited. Putting money into a Roth IRA outside of an employer's qualified plan is very difficult. But so again, the the benefits or the advantages of a Roth IRA, tax-free growth, tax-free distributions. The withdrawals that you can make on these are pretty flexible, subject to a five-year rule that we won't go into, but you can make you can take withdrawals prior to age 59 and a half. And then guess what? There are no required minimum distributions associated with a Roth IRA. So this is a terrific legacy account. Now, the cons, if they're, you know, or the disadvantages of a Roth IRA, not very numerous, but I think I touched on them. The contribution limits are low. You can contribute $6,000 per year if you're under age 50. And then if you're over age 50, you get a $1,000 bump. You can contribute up to $7,000 per year. You don't get a tax deduction. That's okay. And there are income limitations associated with whether you can or cannot make a contribution to a Roth IRA. I won't get into those limits, but, you know, this is where we say, check with your tax advisor, check with your investment advisor, check with your financial professional, and they will be happy to steer you in the right direction as it concerns a Roth IRA. Anyway, Jenna, let me ask you, do you have a Roth IRA?
So I do not.
Okay.
My husband gets to carry the burden.
Okay. Okay.
He does that for us. Just because he's kind of, I want to say, the main breadwinner.
Right.
So a lot of those decisions, especially it's kind of funny because when you're in your early 20s, you don't think about this. You start having kids and you're like, oh, you know, we should start saving. And we did all the savings accounts for each kid.
Right.
We made sure that we started putting away like birthday money when they were really little. Because what do we, you don't need to spend that, quite
right.
frankly.
Right.
I save, save, save.
Right.
You know, what does a 2-year-old need? You know,
yeah.
And then when once we got closer to our 30s, that's when it was like, okay, we started learning a little bit more about even just revolving around life insurance, the
sure.
importance of it,
sure.
the importance of investing, the importance of putting things aside and putting them into the proper accounts.
Right.
And so thankfully at the time we were able to talk to an advisor when we were up in Jersey.
Sure.
And then now that, you know, we're in our mid 30s, we're really glad that we did that.
Absolutely.
And made that decision. I will say, you know, I don't know how old you are when you're listening, but don't wait
right.
to start talking to an advisor.
Right. And that's a good point. And, you know, and one of the things you said was the appropriate accounts. I mean, isn't it mind-boggling how many different accounts you really need to get going? And you're talking about opening accounts for children, opening a Roth IRA. Maybe you have a traditional IRA. Maybe you have an IRA that you rolled over from a previous employer's qualified plan. And then you have your retirement plan with your employer. There are just so many accounts. And I haven't even touched on what I would call your operating accounts, your savings, your checking, mm-hmm. and what you might have at the bank or the credit union. So there's a lot of accounts, and unfortunately, there's no simplifying that, you know?
No, because I'm very a very simple thinker. I'm very just like, okay, matter of the fact, it does drive me a little nuts.
Yeah.
But in the long run, it's worth it, especially
yeah.
if you do have more, you have had more than one employer. Most people don't work for the same employer for,
you know, they used to.
I
it
know.
It used to be a career with one employer and then you retired. You
right.
know? And you just don't see that anymore.
No. So when you're moving all those assets around,
right.
you don't want to, like, and I learned last week you guys were talking about different penalties too. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, I should write that down, make sure we don't
exactly.
do that.
Exactly. And, you know, so that that reminds me of something. I think we've brought this up before. Annalie and I have a client who has actually, I want to say it's 27 qualified plans with different employers. And what happened, he had different contracts all over the country. And whenever he, you know, suited up with a new employer, he participated in the plan. And, you know, a lot of 401ks now allow you to participate immediately. And he, of course, did that. So with 27 different qualified plan accounts, he is slowly, one by one, rolling them into a an IRA rollover, or what will be a traditional IRA. And we're doing them, and we're doing them pretty much one at a time, but that's okay, you know?
Okay. Is that beneficial? Instead of having, 27, that's mind-boggling.
Yes.
But rolling it over one by one appropriately, legally.
That's one way to do it. I think it makes sense to consolidate your assets, immediately, because, if you're getting 27 state, if you're getting 5 or 10 statements, all you're doing is filing away your statements. You're not really looking at, the entire picture, and it's very difficult to do that with 5 accounts, 10 accounts, much less 27. So I think the name of the game is to consolidate your assets as best you can into each of the different accounts, an IRA, a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, an investment account that is non-qualified, meaning non-retirement, and then, of course, you have whatever your employer provides, the employer-qualified plan. So, and that's pretty much, the full gambit of retirement accounts. But, Jenna, what we wanted to do, I wanted to share with our listeners how this crazy account that we've been talking about, not only did we go over the advantages and the disadvantages of a Roth IRA, but we went over the how to perform a Roth conversion, and mm-hmm. what you want to look at, some of the decisions and some of the the facts that go into making the decision to convert traditional IRA assets into a Roth IRA, and that's pretty much income dependent. Income and the income taxes you pay. That's something we have covered, and we will cover it again. But let's talk about the evolution, the genesis of the Roth IRA. The Roth IRA started back in, 1997. And I do remember that. It was a new account, but the only reason the Roth IRA came into being was because Congress would not allow at the time for the traditional IRA contributions to go up, because if you're contributing to a traditional, in most cases, that contribution is tax deductible, and Congress did not want to lose the tax revenue associated with making higher contributions to a traditional IRA. So Senator Bob Packwood and William Roth of, I believe, Delaware pushed this through. And, of course, Roth IRA contributions are not tax deductible. So it was a tax neutral contribution, at least at the beginning. Now, there are a lot of studies going forward what the impact of the Roth IRA contributions will mean, because with everybody taking advantage of the contributions not being deductible on the front end, the pro formas say that the government is going to lose a lot of tax revenue when the money spills out of these Roth IRAs. And remember, there's two things about a Roth IRA. Number one, the distributions are not taxable. Not only that, but the distributions from the Roth IRA are not required. So that money stays in the Roth. It's never taxed again, our Internal Revenue Service loses that tax revenue. That's okay. It's a retirement savings vehicle. It's powerful, but I wanted to talk a little bit about how it came into being. And it, you know, it has quite a history. So as we go forward, please, you know, consider all of the factors that go into making a contribution to a traditional IRA versus a Roth IRA. And I would share with our listeners that probably the most critical factor is, what is your current taxable income? And then you go from there. Again, our listeners, if you have a question, a comment, or just a story to share concerning Roth IRAs or anything that we're going to discuss today, or that we've discussed in the past, please call us at 850-437-1620. And if you have any questions that you'd like to discuss that are more of a personal nature, please feel free to call our office and schedule an appointment with us. You can call our office at 850-437-3127. Ask to speak with Kristen. She'll probably answer the phone, and she will schedule an appointment with Anna Lee and myself, and we can meet and discuss your personal set of circumstances. Did we have a text message or a listener?
So the question was, so are you saying that there is no income limit for a traditional IRA?
There is. Well, you can make a contribution.
Okay.
At any, that's such a great question, Jenna. You can make a contribution. Whether it's tax deductible or not depends on what you make, how much your income is. Okay.
Right.
You can make a contribution to a traditional IRA at any income level. However, whether it's deductible or not depends on how much you make. The Roth IRA definitely limits on being able to make a contribution or not.
Okay. All right. And then the next question, Roth IRA,
okay.
How does one set that up?
Okay. I would advise that you do this. The first thing is look at your taxable income. You may want to have a conversation with your tax advisor or your financial advisor and first make the determination whether it's a good idea. I can share this with you. If you're making a lot of money, you probably do not want to make a Roth contribution. And the reason is it is not tax deductible, and you may not be able to make it anyway if you make too much money. And that amount, that amount's a high amount, but if your income is lower or if you're not in your peak earning years, I would say it's probably a good idea. How do you set it up? Consult with your investment advisor. Your tax advisor may point you in the right direction. Certainly call our office at 850-437-3127. And again, set up an appointment and we can establish a Roth IRA for you. Your contribution will be limited, but you got to start somewhere, right?
Oh yeah. It's worth starting. Nobody gets to the top right away. You got to start somewhere. And hey, we have a caller on the line, Joy from Pensacola. Welcome to the line. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Do you have a question for Mr. Bob today?
I do. I was wondering, I have a small investment with some family members, and because I make less money than they do, I earn less, I'm in a lower tax bracket, we put the investment in my name alone. And I just got in the mail my K-1, and so now I'm kind of wondering how this affects my taxes.
Okay, you received a K-1, and I guess the other family members did not because it's entirely in your name.
Right.
Wow, okay.
Correct.
Very trusting family members. How did they, how did they protect their position? They obviously contributed.
Oh,
did you all contribute the same amounts?
Well, different amounts.
Okay.
But I had they signed a promissory note, or I signed a promissory note to them so that their interest is protected.
Okay.
But now I'm wondering how my interest is protected.
Okay.
I mean, I've got this K-1 now.
Okay. Okay, Joy. Now, all right, you got a K-1, and it's in your name and your name only, and your Social Security number is on. Okay. So that's on you.
Correct.
You need
to
report that on your 2020 1040, obviously. And do you have a tax preparer, or do you do your taxes yourself?
I do it myself.
You do it yourself. Okay. Well, that's on you. And do you have some sort of arrangement once the taxes are paid, or once the liability is determined, that they will pony up the amount, the extra amount that you had to pay?
Sure that they will.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like that's the reason it was, the investment is placed in your name. Didn't you say something about you make less?
Yes, I make less. I'm in a lower tax bracket than they are, so it just seemed to make more sense to put it in my name. And now that taxes are coming, you know, due, I'm just wondering, you know, how to make it right for me.
Okay. Okay. Well,
and how to report it on my taxes and
As we discussed, you are going to have to report it. You know, it's going to be treated as ordinary income. And once you pay it, once you pay it, or once you determine what the amount is, you go to the other family members and share with them, you know, exactly what you had to, you know, to the tune of whatever number of dollars you had to come out of pocket, and you get made whole.
Oh yeah.
But does that,
that sounds good.
Do you understand? Okay. Okay. Any other questions, Joy, or?
Well, if you don't mind, I do have one more question. You were recently talking about estate taxes, and, you know, I don't really know a lot about that. And I was wondering if you could clarify what that is. That an income tax? What is that?
Okay. The estate tax is basically a property tax at death. And It is not an income tax. It is a, like I said, a property tax that is levied on the estate. Okay, I like to distinguish between an estate tax and an inheritance tax. The inheritance tax is levied on the beneficiaries that receive the money after they receive the money from the estate. So they're two different taxes, but both dealing with, they're both a type of death tax. And, it's a very complex area. And if you're not settling, if you haven't settled an estate, if you're not getting up in years, it's not something that, a lot of people are terribly privy to, but it's a rough tax. And the federal estate tax exemption right now is over $11 million per individual. So it doesn't affect a lot of us.
Right. Hey, Joy, I appreciate your questions. Thank you so much for listening. And, hey, I just want to let y'all know that if you ever miss an episode, we actually podcast Winning with Anna Lee. And you can check us out literally on any of your favorite podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, whatever it is, look it up. Or you can go straight to newsradio923.com and click the little podcast tab. It'll drop down to Pep Talk, and you can find Winning with Anna Lee. You'll see the little mainstay icon there. So that's the, I mean, and I podcasted the episode that we talked about the differences between estate tax
and inheritance tax. Like Joy said, it's complicated, but you know, what a great question.
We love questions. Keep them coming in. Throughout the show, we do have another 30 minutes here with Bob right before we go into our little break with the news. But please make sure you text us, call us 437-1620, whether it's about your finances, taxes, or if you just have questions about situations in your life.
Absolutely.
I like those. I like hearing that because those are relatable to me.
Yeah. Let's hear. I guess we're going to hear about the weather here, right?
Oh, boy. Listen, we just need it to get a little bit warmer and to know that we have good things coming our way. So let's check in with Mark Jacobs.
I see some sun out there at least now,
nice.
So we'll see how long that lasts. An effort to give Floridians more control over their digital privacy. That story is coming up after Fox News.
I'm Lillian Wu. He was acquitted in his second impeachment trial. Now, former President Trump faces another legal challenge.
NAACP and Democratic Congressman Benny Thompson claim former President Trump, Rudy Giuliani, the Proud Boys, and the Oath Keepers conspired to incite the January 6th riot, and that they violated the 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act by preventing Congress from carrying out its official duties.
Fox's Rachel Sutherland, a Trump advisor, denies the former president played any role in the violence. And cryptocurrency Bitcoin blows past 50,000 for the first time today.
There's been more interest in Bitcoin since Bank of New York Mellon said it would treat it like any other investment. MasterCard is integrating Bitcoin into its payments network, and Tesla recently revealed it purchased $1.5 billion of Bitcoin.
Fox's Ginny Cosola. America's listening to Fox News.
It's 10:31 at News Radio 92.3, AM 1620. 28, mostly cloudy, a wind chill of 20. I'm Mark Jacobs. Proposed bill to give Floridians more control over their digital privacy. Proposed legislation to require businesses to publish a privacy policy for personal information. House Speaker Chris Sproul says it's not just protecting against big companies.
This law covers more than just big tech. It covers businesses with a global gross annual revenue of over $25 million that buys, receives, or sells information on 50,000 or more customers, households, or devices, or derives more than 50% of their global annual revenue from selling consumers' personal information.
Legislation would expand the Florida Information Protection Act to include biometric data like fingerprints, voice recordings, and retinal scans. A Florida congressman introducing a resolution calling on the U.S. Olympic Committee to withdraw from the 2020 Beijing Winter Games. In a statement, Republican Michael Waltz says he's bringing up the issue after a number of significant human rights violations carried out by the Chinese government. Now the WEAR weather forecast.
Going into the rest of the day, sunny skies, that high reaching near 42 degrees, but those wind chill values staying between 15 and 25 degrees. From the First Warning Channel 3 studios, I'm meteorologist Brooke Richardson.
28 in Pensacola, 29 in Gulf Breeze, 27 in Milton at 10:33. Our next news at 11 with breaking news anytime. I'm Mark Jacobs, News Radio 92.3, AM 1620.
I'm Jennifer Kuschenko with Your Money Now. Stocks are modestly higher. The Dow Industrials up 52 at 31,510. The NASDAQ is up 11. The S&P 500 is ahead, too. President Biden is extending a ban on home foreclosures for federally backed mortgages by 3 months and expanding a mortgage relief program and a push to stabilize the nation's housing affordability crisis. The foreclosure moratorium was set to expire March 31st and instead will be in place through June 30th. Adidas plans to divest the underperforming brand Reebok that it failed to revive 15 years after buying the U.S. fitness label to help compete with arch rival Nike. Engineers at the University of California, San Diego have developed a skin patch that can be worn on the neck to continuously track blood pressure and heart rate while measuring the wearer's levels of glucose as well as lactate, alcohol, or caffeine. It's the first wearable device that monitors cardiovascular signals and multiple biochemical levels at the same time. That's Your Money Now.
Are you thinking about selling your house? Perhaps wondering if right now is the best time to sell? Absolutely! The real estate market is hot and inventory in our area is low, but the demand is high, which means every day you wait to list your house might be costing you valuable time and money. Christina Leavenworth and the Leavenworth team with Levin Rinke Realty are the people to call to help you get your house sold. Christina and her team are committed to getting you the most money for your home and are here to help you every step along the way. Christina and her team have approved buyers prepared to close on a house, and there's simply not enough houses available. That means there's absolutely no reason you should wait any longer. Call Christina and her team right now at 850 323-9158. There's no obligation, absolutely no risk. Call Christina Leavenworth and the Leavenworth team with Levin Rinke Realty right now. 850-723-9158. 850-723-9158. 850-723-9158.
Take a short lifestyle detour from the news of the world. Here's Jenna Barr and the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
That's Anna Lee's song. Hard to believe, right?
I love it. Actually, every time I hear it now during my workouts, I think of her.
Yeah.
So I thank her for that.
Do you know what? I think they were playing. Wasn't that a song during the Super Bowl?
They played it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember in which part.
Maybe
there was so
a
much
commercial.
Screaming happening in
yeah.
the house.
Yeah.
Screams of happiness and sadness.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that's over.
But you do win when you get to come hang out with us. So
that's right.
I appreciate
right.
it. And we've been chatting back and forth between the break. And we just want to remind you guys, please call, text in. If you have a question, a comment, you want to share a story or even a victory you've had in your life, we would love to hear that. 437-1620. Hang out with me and Bob.
So it's really funny. Jenna is really a financial and investment savant over here. I mean, the headphones come off during the commercial break. You know, we don't care about the weather or what's going on in the world. Jenna's just firing questions to me, and she's asking, and I'm almost like, save it for when we. I mean, they're all great questions, but. Jenna's either trying to make me feel good or she's truly interested in this topic. So
my brain is firing on all cylinders. Pretty much from 9 to 11, my brain's like, choom, choom, just going back and forth, thinking of, okay, wait, he just said that. They just said this, but I heard this. Wait a second.
Yeah. She's got to.
I'm taking notes.
Yeah,
you've got our podcast.
Yeah, you've got to get everything situated with what you've heard and get things resolved. One of the questions that Jenna was asking me was about state income taxes from state to state, and that's something that is very near and dear to my heart because. And Jenna, you probably have the same sensation coming from up north. I came from up north. I paid 4 income taxes. There were 4 income taxes on my pay stub. And it was, of course, the federal. Mm-hmm. Everybody pays that, right?
Right.
Well, some don't, but I won't go there. Yeah.
We'll find you.
And... the state, there was Ohio had a state income tax. There was a city of Cleveland income tax, and something called RITA, which was the Regional Income Tax Authority, and it was a few counties that banded together and assessed an income tax for people that worked in those 4 counties in and around Cleveland. But I'm sure if my income taxes were that, I'm sure yours in New Jersey were at least, if not more, punitive. Mm-hmm. I can go on and on about taxes. We are so blessed and so fortunate here in Florida. And I always tell my people, relatives and everybody else, do you ever think you'll move back home? And I say, look, if I ever move back there, I will always retain a residence here mm-hmm. and spend 180 days out of the year here in Florida so that I am not paying taxes up there.
Yeah, I wish, it's funny, my husband made me keep a lot of pay stubs, things from the past basically 8 years, mm-hmm. Just from different scenarios in our lives. But I wish I would have saved some. We just recently got rid of my oldest ones. And then I didn't work for a little while, just having babies.
Right.
But I remember just kind of that oof, like just punch to the gut when you'd see how much was taken out. And then I was sharing with you during the break about how it was back in the day, people from Pennsylvania and New York, even in Delaware, would come to New Jersey to do their shopping before school because you had no tax on clothing
right.
and different materials.
Right.
Well, they just changed that.
Okay. Sales
and
taxes.
So you're paying taxes every which way to Sunday.
Absolutely.
And so I will tell you, people complain about the taxes in Florida, the sales tax. I will tell you, we are so blessed, like you said, that we don't have a state income tax. And even more so the high state income tax. And I've been to other states and done shopping and traveling, right. and I've seen on sales tax upper like 10 to 11%. It'll make mm-hmm. you just,
yeah.
okay, I don't want it.
Yeah.
I don't have to eat today.
Right, right. Well, you know, and of course, I'm talking mostly about state and, or excuse me, income taxes when I'm saying how blessed we are here. You know, you go over the line in Alabama and the property taxes just bottom out.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing.
It's crazy. And we actually have a question from somebody, and it involves Alabama. So let me go ahead and read this for Bob. Our listener says, this is a question about income tax.
Okay.
If I have a primary residence of Tennessee, a secondary residence in Alabama, but I work part-time in Florida. Okay.
Oh, well,
are you following? Are you following? Okay. I
go.
Love this. You just got my brain going.
Yeah.
Okay. So primary residence of Tennessee, secondary residence in Alabama, but work part-time in Florida. Am I required to pay income tax out for Alabama?
No. And what's interesting is, and I shared with, I shared just a few minutes ago how I would never, you know, move back home, for the sole reason, you know, at least full time, establish that as my domicile because of state income taxes. You know, there are other states that do not have a state income tax. Tennessee is one. Texas is another. Alaska is another. And, you know, I can't remember all of them. But so it sounds like our listener is domiciled in the state of Tennessee. Obviously, no state income taxes there. Alabama does have a state income tax that you're a part-time resident there and you're earning the money in the state of Florida. No state income taxes there. I think you're good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what do we say here? You know, consult with your tax advisor.
Yes.
and make sure of that. But that's pretty straightforward. My son is a full-time resident of Colorado. And they have a state income tax there, but he is working now in California. California has the worst or the highest state income tax, I believe, in the country. I think New York is second, but, you know, I've looked at those, you know, those heat maps that show where the highest taxes are, and it's California, New York, and a lot of New England. Good grief. I don't think anybody gets a tax break up there in any way, shape, or form.
They don't get a break from the cold, taxes.
That's right. That's right. That's right. But, you know, that's a great question. And we don't hold ourselves out as, you know, as the begin all, end all, or ultimate authority on taxes. But for our listener, it sounds like you're good with making that money in the state of Florida and being domiciled in the state of Tennessee.
Well, I mean, I have friends who they're from like the Fairhope area,
mm-hmm.
but they commute to Florida
right.
to work.
Right.
And I mean, that's normal to me from
yeah.
growing up in the tri-state area. You
yeah.
you commute everywhere.
Right.
So that I'm grateful for those questions, though, where we can kind of just be at ease in our
yeah,
mind.
Yeah.
But I looked this up real quick. Last year, the state income tax for California was 13.3%.
Yes, that's the highest. That's the highest rate there. And I mean, you know, I'm going to throw some numbers out. You can make, as a married couple, married filing jointly, you can make up to right about $81,000 in taxable income, and you're still paying 12% this year. So $81,000 married filing jointly, and you're paying 12%. Now, you trip over 80, whatever it is. Jenna's looking it up to make sure, but you trip over into 81, you know, 81,000, and it jumps from 12% to 22. But my whole point of sharing this with our listeners is, you know, that's not a lot. And, you know, if you're out in California, you might effectively be doubling that. Now, of course, if you're filing as a single filer, it's half that. It's about 40,000 before you go from 12% to 22%. And again, that's taxable income. That is after you're married filing jointly, $25,100 standard deduction.
So is that why people sometimes file separately?
Well, it's seldom a good idea to file separately.
Okay.
For years I did that. I would just disappear for a weekend, and I remember back in the day going to becoming a hermit for like a 3-day weekend and running the taxes both ways. This is before, you know, computers and, you know, doing it all, you know, with TurboTax.
Right.
And I would test it both ways, you know, and it never worked out for me.
Okay.
Filing a single return as a married person.
Again, that's where your advisors come in before you jump the gun and make those quick decisions. Don't do that. Give the advisors a call. Or call, text in 437-1620. We have some time left in the show, and we want you to win today, no matter what.
Yeah. So, we did have a question earlier about estate taxes, and I did say most of us don't have to worry about federal estate taxes because the exemption is so high. The exemption being how much is your taxable estate, and at what point does it become taxable? Well, if you die and your taxable estate is under, I think, somewhere around $11.5 million, there is no federal estate tax liability. And as Annalee and I have shared, that exemption is coming way down. And one of the things that I had a conversation with a client of ours this past week, and he was asking about the estate tax exemption, and I told him, you know, it was really high. It was, you know, a little over $11.5 million. He didn't have a problem, but he was pretty certain I was wrong, okay? Because just 24 years ago, the exemption was $600,000, and it was $600,000 for 10 years. So when I say the exemption, that is the amount that is not subject to federal estate taxes. So in 1998, the exemption, the federal estate tax exemption, went from $600,000 to $625,000, meaning any amount over that is subject to federal estate taxes. And Jenna, I know, you know, you're young. I like to think I'm young. I don't think too much about federal estate taxes. But when you have a taxable estate, you don't start out at 10% like in our income tax rate and go to 12%. It starts at about 40%, and that federal estate tax goes up to 55%. So it is a big tax once you're paying it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot.
There are no softer what do you call it? There's no gradual tax in the federal estate taxes. Once you have a taxable estate, you're paying a lot out.
Okay. And here's a question. What is probate?
Okay. And we get that question a lot. People, okay. a lot of the folks we work with, a lot of people we have conversations along the lines of estate settlement or estate planning, they seem to equate probate with tax liability. And probate is the process of settling one's estate, typically through the courts, okay? And people are typically predisposed to avoiding probate. Now, avoiding probate and the process of settling an estate, I'm not really defining probate, but what I'm sharing with the listener is avoiding probate is not synonymous with avoiding federal estate taxes. They're two different things. Let me share with our listener exactly what goes through probate. Assets pass really one of three ways at death. First and foremost, by title. If something is titled jointly and there's right of survivorship, it goes to the survivor. If it's a TOD account, which is transferable on death or payable on death to named individuals, then it avoids probate. So anything that passes by title avoids probate. Second, if it's an account or an asset that has a beneficiary named or some sort of beneficiary designation. What I mean by that is any retirement plan, whether it's your 401k, 403b, all the ones that begin with a 4, if it's your IRA, your Roth IRA, your employer's qualified plan that they have for you, there is a primary beneficiary and a contingent beneficiary designation. When you name somebody, it avoids probate. So it passes by beneficiary designation. Other assets that pass by beneficiary designation, annuities, mm-hmm. life insurance, trusts have a beneficiary. So those pass per the terms of the type of account it is. And then, so that's the second way. First way, title. Second way, beneficiary designation. Third is by will or operation of law. If you own an account in your name and your name only, and it has no beneficiary designation, and again, it's in your name only, so it's not joint, it's not TOD, your name and your name only, then it passes per the terms of your will, your last will and testament, if you have one, or by operation of law, if you die intestate. And intestate means dying without a will. So those are the, everything falls into those three categories, title, beneficiary designation, or by will or operation of law. And those assets that pass that third way, per the terms of your will or by operation of law, and those assets are in your name and your name only, those go through probate.
Okay. And I did jot those down for
I
to
see
make,
you writing over there. What is wrong with
like
you?
There's smoke coming from my
What is wrong with you?
I look like the Tasmanian devil writing. But I do have, this is kind
do
of
you
a
do
cool.
this with Mike Wiggins when you're talking
oh,
about?
Oh, yeah, okay, I do. Okay. Sometimes I just disappear back behind the computers while I make notes and he's talking. But this is a really cool question, and I'm glad they asked.
Okay.
As a Florida resident, how do taxes affect with buying and selling Bitcoin?
Oh, gosh. Can we go through a show without Bitcoin or
People
cryptocurrencies?
It's like buzz.
Now, okay, I heard Bitcoin and I forgot everything else.
Okay.
All right.
How do taxes affect with buying and selling?
Okay. It depends on what sort of account you hold them in. And, if you're buying Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin's ticker is BTC, and you're buying it in an individual account, and you hold it for less than 365 days, it's short-term gain, if you have a gain, and I'm sure you do, with Bitcoin. It's treated as ordinary income. If you hold it for more than 365 days, it's long-term gain, and you're either paying 0, 10, or 15% on those assets. But You know, it really, really depends on, and excuse me, I'm going back to the income tax tables. If it's treated as long-term gain, you owned it for over 365 days, you'll pay either 0, 15, or 20% as long-term gain. Again, under 365 days, it's treated as ordinary income, and you refer to your income tax rates. If it's in a retirement account, you pay nothing. Mm-hmm. Why? Because anything inside a retirement account is tax-deferred mm-hmm. or tax-free if it's a Roth IRA. And all gain, interest, dividends is not treated as a taxable event, as long as it took place inside that retirement account.
Yeah.
Or even inside any tax deferred product.
Right. I don't see Bitcoin going anywhere anytime soon. I've even heard chat about employees wanting to be paid via Bitcoin, which cracks me up because, you know, show me the money.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's stored currency. It's, but I don't see anybody using it as currency, right?
Okay.
You know, well, Bitcoin is over $50,000 per Bitcoin. It's had meteoric growth. It's been a great investment. So, we are not recommending. We certainly are not with the furthest thing from it. We always say this: if you cannot understand the asset or the investment, don't buy it.
Okay, that's really good advice. Yeah.
But I would say investors in Bitcoin have certainly been rewarded in the past.
There you go. And yeah. I want to backtrack before, because we just have a minute or so left, probably about 2 minutes. The probate, talking about the question with probate. So you're settling one's estate. There's three different ways, you said, where there was the title.
Title is the most powerful form of transferring assets.
Okay.
At death, it goes to the survivor. If it's a joint with right of survivorship account, it goes to the people or entities named. If it's a TOD, POD account, mm-hmm. transferable on death, payable on death. And I would dare say those really cannot be contested, those forms of transferring ownership. So, yeah, the first is title. Second is if there are named beneficiaries in the type of account, whether it's an annuity, retirement account, a trust. And then the third way, again, is passing per the terms of your last will and testament, or if you die without a will, intestate. And it depends on the laws governing intestacy in the state that you reside in. And
okay.
For us, you know, so probably a really good time to tell or remind our listeners to have a will. You know, get a will. You are going to die. It's not if you die, it's when you die. And we all need a will. I know we are winding down with the show, but as always, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you have a personal story, or if you'd like to meet with us one-on-one or with Annalee and myself, please call the office at 850-437-3127. Kristen will set up an appointment with typically Annalee and myself, and you know, we'll get to the bottom of whatever you want. But thank you. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful